Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back. Second hour of the show. This thing's going nuts on Twitter today with the woman who reclined her seat on the airplane and then the guy was like banging the back of the seat and everything, and people are weighing in. And I am a recliner. I'm a proud recliner. And I'll recline as soon as I get up into the air and I hear that seatbelt light go up. Actually, probably before that, as soon as we're kind of leveling off. But some of you don't like that. In fact, I think I'm in the minority. Well, Chris Raby is going to join us from Jupiter, Florida at 3:30. We'll get into that. We started this segment, Raby Rants, about a month ago, and I think that's a good one. And I don't even know where Raby is on that. I don't know if he's a recliner or not. We have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane Duker will be here. Gene Evans, the executive director of the State Republican Party, former Democratic Senator Jeff Smith, all in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll talk about the coronavirus and the aftermath, of course, of New Hampshire, the controversy today involving Rush Limbaugh, and a whole lot more. That's in the 2 o'clock hour tomorrow. And Jane and I will hang out in the 3. Oh, Dave, by the way, is he in there? I might have, for number one songs tomorrow, I might have deleted one that you put in there accidentally. So just check those. It's going through. You shouldn't let the host, you know, work with the equipment. We are joined in the studio this afternoon by the director of the new IMAX film that's opening tomorrow at the St. Louis Science Center, Apollo 11, First Steps Edition. Todd Douglas Miller is with me. How are you? Welcome to St. Louis.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with this. Are you a recliner on an airplane or not? Do you recline? Do you have a position on that?
I do. I have to admit, I am a recliner.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, why wouldn't you recline? It's comfortable. It is comfortable. Where are you from?
I am from Brooklyn, New York.
I don't hear the New York accent at all.
I was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay, so a little bit Western roots there, right?
And then about 20 years of Brooklyn thrown in.
Yeah. Man, you know, I've never been to Brooklyn. 2 years ago, went for the first time. I was in New York seeing some theater, and it was really impressive, and I was told how much it's changed, even in the last 10 years, right? Maybe in the last 5 years.
It is. It's true. You know, it's funny. I think, like anywhere else, it's changed, but my grandmother grew up in the same neighborhood I live in, and I'd recently found some old photographs, and I'm actually amazed at how much things have stayed the same in certain pockets. So it's, you know, it's always interesting.
A lot of character in Brooklyn, right?
A lot of character.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think most people who go to New York, you don't get to the other boroughs that often. I know that I really hadn't, but I was lucky enough to get a little tour and grab some pizza in Brooklyn a couple of years ago with my buddy Norbert Leo Butz, 2-time Tony Award winner. And I think he's best known from his work on Bloodline. Well, let's talk about Apollo 11. And here's my first question. So my good friends at Neon Films, who just produced the best picture winner, Parasite, sent me a big packet of films. And one of them is Apollo 11, right? Is this different than your film? Because this one's called The First Step. So is this sort of leaping off that documentary or commonality or the same thing?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, when we first conceived of the project, we always knew that we wanted to have a museum and science center release. So typically those films are less than an hour long. Right. So the only way that we can get them into what I really love are these theaters was to make it under that. So, you know, last year at Sundance, we premiered Apollo 11. Had a great run. It was in commercial IMAX theaters for the feature-length version. But we always had envisioned to do a cut-down, a 47-minute version of it. But we also include some new stuff that you haven't seen before. So there's a few shots in there that are different, and it's also we call it a special edition because we really calibrated it to be seen in OmniMax, which is, you know, on the dome,
right.
And also in these science center and museum screens.
So I feel terrible because, quite honestly, I have not seen the full-length movie, and it's been on my list. I was even scrambling this morning in my office. I'm like, where's that screener? I was going to toss it in at least to watch, you know, part of it. I'm fascinated with space. I'm fascinated with that story. I love this stuff, and certainly I have to catch this at the IMAX. One of the things just in reviewing the trailer, I'm just shocked by how clear some of the video from 50 years ago is. And I don't know what the re-enhancement was of that, but it's a lot clearer than any of the news footage you would have ever seen. It almost looks like it's HD.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just a testament to the cinematographers that shot this. You know, before IMAX existed, there was actually large format film. Not to get too technical, but it was called a Tadeo format. So the same thing that they shot the special effects sequences on 2001. Films like Oklahoma, these were all shot in this giant, large format 65 millimeter film.
And so it was 65 millimeter.
65.
How does that? What, so what's explain technically just a little the difference bit between smaller, that and 70?
It's a little bit smaller than what the IMAX is, which is they deal in perforations. So it's called 15 perf on IMAX, okay. And this was 5 perf. So just a little bit smaller, but effectively the same thing. And they were exhibited. The same. They were usually exhibited in special venues and science centers and museums to compete with the big threat back then, which was television.
So you went through, I mean, you're talking thousands of hours of archive video to put a project like this together, right?
Yeah, so we actually had, there's two components. There was the reels, the large format reels. When we originally approached NASA and the National Archives, we actually wanted to rescan not only all the large format material that they had. Actually, we didn't even know it existed back then. When we first started, we were only going to do 16 and 35 millimeter. But we basically said, all the film you got, we want to rescan it because nobody had really done that. And the company I was working with back in New York, Final Frame, had developed this prototype film scanner to be able to do it in a very efficient manner. So that was a big part of all of this. That technology had gotten up to the point where we were able to scan it in a very cost-efficient way. So about 3 months into the kind of the what became kind of a research project on behalf of the National Archives, they told us about this discovery of these large format reels. At the time, no idea what was on them. A lot of the cans didn't have any labels on them. We didn't know. We knew that it was all based around July 1969, and a lot of the reels said Apollo 11. So it wasn't until we actually did some test scans when we really understood what we had.
How do you find out about that? Was that like a text message or a phone call? Were you there in person? Because I would think that as a filmmaker looking into a project like this, there was a lot of excitement. I don't know what the personal human reaction would be, but I think I would say probably just me because I like profanity. F yeah. Are you kidding me? This is great stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was actually came in an email, and anyone that's ever dealt with archivists, librarians, they're not the most excited people
not
in the
as
world.
Full of personality as other people. That's true, right?
But we got this email that in the middle of it, actually, it was this big, long email. And in the middle of the email about bullet point number, you know, 4 in this giant paragraph did have some bold words and also had some explanation points. You never get that from archivists. So,
right.
There was some excitement on their part, but it really wasn't until, and at the time we only thought there was about 60 reels, but it really wasn't until we got the materials, a couple of the reels up to New York, tested them, and then we saw, you know, the face of Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins getting suited up the day of the launch. We saw aerials from cameras that had been mounted into helicopters of the Saturn V being let out onto the pad and you know, down at the pad 39A in Cape Canaveral. And it just blew our minds. I mean, there were some locked door moments. But then we had to figure out exactly the logistics of it all. How do we transport these materials that hadn't left cold storage in College Park outside D.C. in 50 years? How do we get them to New York? So
in other words, without them disintegrating and things along those lines? Is that what you're referring to?
Or yeah, I mean,
it's to protect the film.
Yeah, it's film. And then there was some security around it, too, because these were the original camera negatives. So not to be confused with, you know, prints or, you know, copies of what came out of the cameras.
Does NASA send, like, security people with you when all this is happening then?
We actually, it was decided, we had a partnership agreement with the federal government, and we had climate-controlled vehicles over the course of better half about 8 months that went up the I-95 corridor. There were two drivers, high security, white glove, never stopped. There was some anxiety, I guess, back then. This was 2018 when this happened. So if you remember there was a couple government shutdowns. So there were some moments where we had, production assistance in a car because if the government shut down, the first place to go are National Archives, the parks, the museums, the Art Institute.
Right.
So we knew that we couldn't get the materials back to D.C. And we had hard drives, negative, everything in one location, which is always a bad thing. We tried to work as quickly as we could. It was the second government shutdown. We actually put a PA with some hard drives and just get across the Hudson, you know, drive until we tell you to stop kind of thing. So it was kind of hair-raising there for a little bit.
Todd Miller is with us. Apollo 11 First Steps Edition starts at the OmniMax at the Science Center tomorrow. Hang on, we'll come back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never.
Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Yeah, we're going to get with Chris Raby down in Jupiter. Talk a little baseball, but mainly the most important story of the day. It's not Roger Stone, ladies and gentlemen. It's the guy who was banging on the woman's seat in the airplane because she was reclining. So we're going to talk about that and debate it healthily here in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes on KMOX. Todd Miller's with me. He is the director of Apollo 11 First Steps Edition. That is the IMAX version of the documentary that came out last year. Opens tomorrow at the Science Center. I was only 4 years old when this all occurred. And one of the things that I had fun with last year during the anniversary, and I can't remember the website, but they had this great website that was out there where you could listen to real-time audio. You can see what was happening at the time. Fascinating. I don't know if some of that audio came from what you guys discovered, but I kept it going in my kitchen, especially on the actual anniversary, and just listened to it the whole morning.
The first... right around the same time that we got exposure to all the film reels, NASA called us up, said, we have 18,000 hours of mission control audio no one's heard before. You guys 18, interested?
18,000 hours.
11,000 hours of that was Apollo 11. When we got it, it was a needle in a haystack. It was, if anybody that's worked with old analog audio, these came from one-inch tapes. So if you can imagine, you have 30 flight controllers, all in mission control, and sitting in the front room, everyone that had a headset on and a microphone was recorded on an individual loop. And then you had a whole set of 30 people behind them in the back rooms working, and all of them were recorded. So at any given time, we had 60 tracks, but none of it was organized. So a colleague of mine, Ben Feist, who was working out of Toronto, actually had an ad agency at the time, who has since been hired to do data aggregation for the new Mars missions, got hired by NASA, figured out a way, working with some grad students out in Europe, they develop an algorithm to take this large data set, which was this 11,000 hours, sync it all up, clean it up for us. So when we had it, we can rifle through and start developing transcripts, start working with NASA's chief historian, Bill Berry, and his group, and then start working with the astronauts and their families. You know, what haven't you heard before? We have this piece of audio. You know, what do you guys think? You know, Michael Collins and Buzz Aldrin are still alive. Neil Armstrong's sons, Rick and Mark, are still around. So it was that audio became a real goldmine for us to kind of mine some stories and include
Absolutely.
It in the film.
Really, really interesting. So just hearing you explain that and how it came together, even trying maybe a project like this 10 years ago or 15 years ago would have been even more daunting, wouldn't it have?
Yeah, it would have been impossible. First of all, the technology just didn't exist to be able to transfer any of the large format material. You could have still kind of done the creative, which is what we did. I think the thing that kind of stands out with our film is that it's told in a direct cinema style. So there's no talking heads. There's no narration. We're putting viewers right there in the moment. That style, I guess, could have been done 10 years ago, but you wouldn't have had all the wealth of, material to get out of what we had.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of the non-narrated documentaries, but I'm always amazed because that's a lot harder than it looks when we watch it as a viewer to make sure that everything sort of syncs up with the storytelling and that people aren't lost, right?
Yeah, you're doing Apollo 11, so we wanted to have the best Saturn V rocket launch ever. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of good audio recordings of a Saturn V and what it sounded like. So we just had to test it. So we would go down to DC to the Air and Space Museum on their IMAX screen. Anytime we had a scene that was cut and we'd get the astronauts, NASA guys, everyone that witnessed something that was, technical, we wanted to get their seal of approval on it. And 9 times out of 10, they'd tell us we're off. And we'd have to, you know, tuck our tail between our legs, go back and work. Even when we thought we nailed something, you know, you got to get a little bit, you know, that high-end sound in there. You got the low stuff, you know, it's hitting us, but little things like that. Or it was like visual, you know, Michael Collins, is this what the translunar injection maneuver looked like from your perspective, which was after they launch and they go around the Earth a couple times, they light the candle to go to the moon. And that was a big deal. Anytime you light an engine in space, it's a big deal. So this film takes advantage of those little moments that maybe some other fiction and nonfiction films haven't, where we try to, if it was a big deal for the astronauts, we want to depict it in the film and let you see that. And that's what you get with this film.
You know, why is it that 50 years later, with all the things you mentioned, Mars, we have a rover on Mars, all this technology, we can sit here, do everything from our phone, which has the power of, you know, a large computer. But still, you go back 50 years and you look at that achievement and how high it stands in history.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I put it up right up there with, you know, an evolutionary step in our human history. You know, it's the first time that humans set foot on another world. And it's a profound statement about existence and who we are. And it's, it's a technical, you know, achievement, but also, you know, who knows? We might be here another 100 years, 1,000, 1,000,000. We don't know, but we've got to get out there if we want to survive as a species. The Earth's not going to be here forever. And I think Apollo 11 and the Apollo program and what was so profound about it serves as a primer on how we do that.
Did you get to know? Did you spend a lot of time with Buzz Aldrin?
Yeah, so we were very lucky last year. We got awarded the Stephen Hawking Medal in Zurich, in Switzerland, and Buzz and a lot of the guys were out for that. We got to show them early cuts before the premiere at Sundance last January. He has just been, you know, I've always caught him on good days, and he's, you know,
he's a unique, I've interviewed him one time, this was a long time ago, but I remember that being a very unique experience. He, you know, he's got a unique personality. Maybe the moon has affected him, but certainly an interesting character. And, you know, when you look at the history, it's just amazing.
Yeah. And these guys have been doing this for 50 years. They've been on this like world tour, you know?
Sure.
And I think a lot of times, when they deal with media or filmmakers, they say the same sound bites. We tried to drill down into that myth a little bit more with those guys. You don't see it in the film, but it's reflected in the film from our conversations we had with them. And I think that they had a lot of respect for us for doing that. And we tried to spend as much time with them and also engross ourselves in the books they've written and interviews that they've done before and films they've done before and try to be respectful.
So I try, Mindy Pierce is here from the Science Center. She knows this. I try to expose my little girl. I have two older sons. They're a lost cause. You know, I can't even speak to what's happened with them. But no, they're good kids. My daughter's 5, about to be 5. And
I have a 6-year-old. Yeah.
So is this appropriate? Will a 5-year-old understand all this or not?
Absolutely. My 6-year-old daughter, who was 4 and 5 when, you know, we were making this film, who sat through all the test screenings, loves it and sat through every single one. My twin boys who are younger fell asleep during the rocket launch, which is, I think they're the only people in the theater to do that.
Hey, but that guy sitting in there with the glasses on, he's got twins too, you guys.
All right, we have lots to talk about.
Twin boy father. So you're in town, obviously. It premieres tomorrow at the Science Center. Is there a Q&A or something you're doing around this weekend's events?
Yeah, tonight we have some member screenings that will be doing some Q&As, and then the film opens tomorrow.
What else are you working on right now? Usually guys like you are already into the next project. Is that true? You're just working on the publicity for this?
Yeah, we have a big fiction, large format film we're working on, and we also have another nonfiction doc that we're working on.
That didn't tell me anything,
years.
Todd. That didn't tell me anything. Are you kidding me? You can't tell me what it is.
I will
though,
say
right?
this though: the award season has killed us this year.
In what way?
It's just
because
like
you guys were.
Last couple of months have been a process, but I do want to say, since we're in St. Louis, the St. Louis Critics Association gave us the best film of the year, and thank you for all of the critics out there.
Of which I am a member, and I sadly could not vote in that category because I didn't see all the films, so I abstained from that vote. It would have gone to you.
You were honest, though. That's good.
Well,
that's good.
You have to be, I think, because I try to do diligence. But it's funny because Taika Waititi, I think, just said this. Jojo Rabbit. I don't know if you've seen that great film.
Taika's amazing.
So he said, did you see his quote about award season?
No.
So for people, I talk about it in terms that people might even be familiar with it. Normal people don't know what we're talking about. But certainly at the end of the year, you maybe start with the Toronto Film Festival, these movies that roll out that could be nominated. It's all about Oscar, but you go through the guilds, and then I'm a member of the Critics' Choice Association and the SAG Awards and all that. But Taiki said that he thinks it was more stressful to go through awards season than making the movie itself.
That's absolutely 100% true. And I was with Taika at all those awards shows, and I concur. And he is one of the best at acceptance speeches too.
So were you able to at least feed off the energy because Neon also produced Parasite?
Yeah, I think probably one of the best experiences of my life is hanging out with Bong and Song the last couple months and just having I was like a sponge, and I've been a giant Bong fan going all the way back to Memories of Murder. So to just talk to him for hours on end. It's just been a really amazing
really
experience.
Interesting. Well, Todd, thank you so much. I'm a big movie geek, so it's a thrill to meet you and to talk to you. And I'm going to take my daughter, for sure. You gave me the approval there. It starts at the Science Center, the member screenings tonight. You might see Todd Miller. It opens tomorrow. Thanks for coming in. We'll see you again on those elusive projects that you talked about. You best come in here and talk about them when they come to fruition. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
It's 3:30. We'll get into the biggest debate of the year, whether or not you should recline your seat on an airplane, coming up here this afternoon on KMOX.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
From pitchers and catchers reporting through the final pitch of the spring. Hey, it's Chris Raby. I'm in Florida, and I'll have daily spring training reports mornings and afternoons. Sponsored by Together Credit Union. Share your dreams. We'll share the journey. And by Wilkie Window and Door, the Anderson Window and Door Specialists. On your home for the Cardinals, KMOX.
Hey, that guy right there, Chris Raby, is with us from Jupiter, Florida this afternoon for Raby's Rants. How are you?
What's going on, man?
Well, it's cold here, Chris.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah,
you're
it's not
say
here.
Anything? Yeah, I figured.
It's warm. It's very warm. It's perfect. It's about perfect. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Now you're breaking up. I can't hear him. Right, Dave? Do we have technical problems with Raby? Okay, go ahead.
Air conditioning, Ben? Is there air conditioning in here? All right, thank you. What's up, buddy?
Is Boyd down there already, too?
Yeah, he's here.
What a sweet deal. I got to be in the sports department. I'm going to ask if I can switch over. We started this a few weeks ago, and I got a good one for you today. And I sent this morning. I saw Clay Travers tweet about it. We are doing a Raby rant here this afternoon, and this was the poll question. And I didn't ask you your position on this, so I'm not exactly sure. He tweeted out, "For the record, I am 100% opposed to seats reclining on airplane flights. Should airplane seats be designed to recline?" So without even knowing the background of this, because there's this viral video out there, I said yes. I was in the extreme minority. At this point of the poll, it was, and I can check it again, it was 69-31%. Dave, will you check that for me to see where he is? And the no votes were overwhelming. But what happened was, is he was responding, and you've seen it now. I think a lot of people, there was a woman who had reclined on a seat. The guy behind her didn't like it, so he starts banging on her seat, and she recorded him doing it. So your response to that is what?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, no, seats on airplanes should not recline.
What are you talking about?
If you recline your seat on an airplane, you are... This goes back to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago. People inherently are selfish and are apparently... inherently bad. And, you know, there are a few terrible things that people do on airplanes that impact everyone around them, and they do them without any regard for anyone else. While we are all sharing this space for a couple of hours, hurtling through the air at hundreds of miles an hour. And the offenses are, in no particular order,
we thought we've agreed on some of these, right? We've talked about these. We've agreed.
Bringing any food that is not a dried food onto the plane.
Pizza.
So bringing any type of food that smells.
Yeah.
People do that. That's bad. Using the airplane or the waiting area at the gate like it's your living room. Taking your shoes off.
You agree on that?
You know, putting your feet up on things.
Right.
Reclining your seat, also very, very selfish. You're not getting a massage.
No.
You're not going to sleep for the night.
Can I ask you a question? Why would the seats be able to recline if they weren't intended to recline?
Well, because when
that's a mic drop, there's no response for that.
Because when airlines started this, there was a lot more room in between seats because they weren't cramming as many people onto these
planes.
That
could be true. That's partially true, certainly.
Yeah. Why are there still ashtrays on some planes, Mark? Should you be able to smoke a cigarette at 35,000 feet?
Yes, I should, Kimmel? Chris.
You're just a lobbyist.
By the way, I'm old enough to remember when that happened.
Tobacco.
No,
big
I'm
recline
kidding.
And big tobacco.
Listen, I'm going to state my position. Hold on. I want you to hear my position. I am, and I don't know why this is. You know, when I was tested in school, remember when they used to do those scoliosis tests when you were in school? I think I was told I have curvature of the spine.
Because I didn't go to school during the Great Depression.
So my father is an example of this. He might be listening. I get into his car when they come to visit here, and I have to move his car from my driveway. He's got his seat in like the most upright position as possible. I can't drive like that. I can't sit in my car like that. I cannot sit on an airplane. I can't sit in an exit roll because the things don't recline. That is uncomfortable. What I'm looking for when I spend $300, $400, $500, $600, $800 on an airplane flight, I'm looking for comfort. I'm looking for comfort,
right,
which
Bezos,
involves
we get it.
Reclining the seat.
Well, then sit in first class if you're that just fabulously wealthy. Listen, here's the thing. When I drive my car as well, and I know this because Sam Masterson has gotten in the car and has moved the seat all the way up because he has little tiny bird legs. I recline my seat. I move the seat back. But guess what? If someone gets in the driver's side back seat behind me, I generally ask them if they need more room, and I move my seat up because I am a considerate person. I am not a selfish jerk like you. And people that are only concerned about their own comfort get on a plane and immediately recline their seat. Like, it's not like they're so straight up and down that they're trying to fix your posture. Like, I've never sat in an airplane seat and thought, oh my gosh, my back hurts because I'm so erect at a perfectly 90-degree
angle. I don't want to talk about your personal problems, but here's what I would say.
Is anyone actually having that problem? You're acting like when you get in a car and you haven't adjusted the seat, or you're getting in an airplane seat, it's like you're wearing a straitjacket.
Okay, how long was your
flight? I don't think anyone has ever had that problem.
Your flight to Jupiter was how long? 90 minutes? 2 hours?
Yeah, two hours.
So I don't want to sit in that position for 2 hours. I just don't. It's not comfortable for me.
Upright?
Now, I don't want to look. I don't like it. I don't want to inconvenience the person behind me. When I take the seat back, I do it very gently. And I have taken notice previously, believe it or not, if there's someone that is abnormally large or tall or something like that, because I think that that's a little tougher on them. But I don't think it's unreasonable when someone, you know, reclines their seat in front of me. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay, so you want to be comfortable. I am a tall person. What about my comfort? And it's not comfortable when
really
the back of your seat
your
is jamming into my knees.
I don't really care about your comfort, though.
Exactly. So you are inconsiderate. How do you like, when you're at a restaurant, do you like lean back or demand a seat that reclines because you can't bear to sit upright for the hour that you're having dinner? It's so horribly uncomfortable. Like, when are you running into all these situations where you're seated in these horribly uncomfortable torture chambers?
In my
of
dad's
chairs?
Car and in an airplane. I've narrowed it down to that. And my wife's aunt is like that too. She comes to visit us and I get in her Jeep and it's all straight. I don't like it, Raby, and I don't see why. I ask Klein. He's in the
Well, that explains
with you.
A lot.
Well, I just don't understand why, when we're allowed legally and technologically to recline, what is it, an inch and a half? What does that thing go back? An inch and a half, Raby?
Okay,
Two inches?
How much comfort are you actually
That's
getting?
A lot
Can
of comfort.
You just suck it up?
No, it's more comfortable to have the seat back just a little bit. It's like I'm in an office chair right now. You sit at this chair. You know it's not just straight up behind your back. There's the ability to have
well,
some
neither
flex.
Is a plane. Neither is a seat on a plane.
Yeah, it is. It's straight up.
Okay, I what are you flying, Puritan Furniture Airlines? Like, what are these seats that are straight up and down? Like, what woodsmith is fashioning these seats in the terminal and then slapping them onto the plane?
The thing that really frustrates me here is I always felt like years ago, maybe the tide has turned on this, that I was in the majority because I used to have a news director in Milwaukee, Dan Shelley, who's actually got Missouri roots because he was from the Springfield area. And we had this debate 20 years ago when I was at WTMJ in Milwaukee, and he was tall. He's very tall.
Come up with some
than
fresh
you.
Takes.
But I thought that the majority was on my side at that point. Now I see this poll, and Dave told me that it's basically 70-30. 70% of the people in this country are wrong about this, and they think you should not be able to recline on the airplane. But there's only 30% of us who are right, which is kind of weird, I think. And I'm happy to be in the minority on the right side of this. The majority doesn't... Look, it's like the majority of people bought Britney Spears music and stuff like that. I don't want to be in the majority there. I want to be in the minority that's right.
Selfish move. I thought we were going to rant about something else at first, but this is good because I think people should tweet at us right now and let us know where they stand on this. And you know what? I'll take it one step further. If you are a recliner, I guarantee, not you personally, anyone out there, if you're a recliner, you don't fly very often. You are generally not on airplanes because if you are, when you've had to deal with the person in front of you reclining their seat for an hour and 20-minute flight, like, that's the guy in front of you. He's got, you know, Sbarro pizza, and he's reclining his seat because he can't bear to not be asleep with a belly full of mozzarella for an hour and 20 minutes. That's what's wrong with people. Like, you're on a plane. You're on a plane, Mark. The fact that you are experiencing air travel should be enough. Now you're complaining that the seats aren't comfortable enough? Buy a first-class ticket or just deal with it. Deal with it. Everyone else does.
I'm gonna call a witness in here this afternoon. Hang on. I'm going to call a witness. Are you ready? Because I disagree with you. You're wrong. I'm calling in a witness. Here we go. Mrs. Reardon, would you like to weigh in? Because I don't fly very often, but Mrs. Reardon, Chris Raby, as you know, she flies all the time. Mr. Reardon, how are you?
Oh, my God. It's going to make me really upset if we disagree on something because we are both smart and Mark is generally not.
Well, I mean, we're both really good golfers and, you know, we enjoy the same, you know, sports teams, but we are in absolute disagreement on this.
God, you are a family of recliners, Reardon.
Before we even take off.
Well, first of all, it's against the rules.
Yeah, it is against the rules.
I don't care. Yeah. Well, I also don't ever use airplane mode, so there's that.
Oh, see, I don't
She's a rebel. Because I'm going to run out of time here, Rebecca Reardon, but explain your position on reclining.
So there's two things. One is, and I think Mark described, like sometimes you have an hour flight, sometimes you have a four-hour flight. But there's no reason that it should mechanically be allowed to do that if it wasn't meant to recline. So Southwest can switch out all the seats, and Delta and American Airlines, they can all switch it out.
But until they do that, we're going to enjoy our freedoms in this country.
It's for comfort. Pure comfort.
What airline are you guys flying that you're in these horribly uncomfortable seats?
Well, Becky flies Southwest all the time, and I do for the most part, too.
So do I. Yeah. I never have an issue.
It's okay being wrong, Raby. It's not a big deal.
Yeah,
it's fine.
You're just wrong. Maybe the airline industry needs to have a complete overhaul because of this viral video that's gone out.
And let me just tell you this: if that guy on that video was doing that behind my seat, I would have been arrested for assault because
they would have landed the plane in Iowa on your way to LA or wherever you were headed.
That guy is the same guy who tweets that the person in front of him at the grocery store in the 10 items or less lane has 24 items. Instead of actually saying something to the person, if it bothers you that much, you do something. I guess this wasn't passive aggressive.
Wow, it was dumb. It was dumb.
Downright psychotic.
Hey, I gotta go.
He's got a look in his face.
I'm okay with that as long as they're not writing checks. So
I'm
24 items I'm good with, but no check writers.
All right, Rebecca Reardon, I'll see you a little bit later. Maybe I'll talk to you at 4:15.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Audio cut of the day. You hear it every afternoon right around this time. Sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. I'm going to do an audio daily double this afternoon. The first one is, I may do a triple. This is astronaut Christina Cook returning after 328 days in space. And listen to what she said.
When you're readapting to 1G and to Earth, you might experience some motion sickness and things like that. I'm really fortunate in that I have not experienced that. But what I have noticed is that my balance has taken a little while to get used to. The physical act of walking was something to get used to, but I'm feeling great. I think just all of the new things that I'm experiencing, sort of you see your mind wake up to the sensory experiences that define Earth and the things that are here.
Second audio cut of the day in our daily double. That's interesting, isn't it? We talked to the director of the new IMAX film Apollo 11 earlier. I meant to play that to him. Jim Carrey was doing an interview with a young reporter named Charlotte Long. It was a junket interview about the movie Sonic the Hedgehog. Opens tomorrow. Actually, pretty good movie. I was surprised. Took my daughter last weekend. I'll review it here and on Great Day St. Louis tomorrow. So she's with something called Heat Magazine, and she's interviewing Jim Carrey. So Sonic in the movie has a bucket list, and he's scratching things off his bucket list. Carrey's in the movie, so she asks him this question.
After all you've done in your career and in your life, is there anything still left on your bucket list?
Just you.
Wow.
That's it. It's all done now.
I don't know what to say to that.
Just own it.
So it was maybe a little hard to hear. They put that out with some music behind it for, I think, copyright reasons. But essentially, she says, is there anything on your bucket list? And he says, just you, just you. And she laughs nervously, and Jim Carrey says, just own it. Now, in our cancel culture, that certainly would be enough to end most people's careers. We'll see what happens here. Moderately funny to me, but there's not a lot that offends me. So we'll see where it goes. That's your audio or your audio cuts of the day. Total Information PM is coming up.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.